Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's get started. So class number two. So we're continuing with the story of Yaakov and Esav. Let's do a very quick review of what we did last week, and then we will move forward. Okay, so it's chapter 25. That's my first correction. I had it labeled mistakenly last week. It's Perek Chaf Hei 25. Beginning of Parashas Toldos, he went through the generations of Yitzchak, son of Avram. Avram begat Yitzchak. There we gave his age, Yitzchak being 40 years old when he gets married. We had a number of questions on how we identify Rivka as the daughter of Besuel, the sister of Lavan, who we already know. And then we get into the heart of our story, Yitzchak davening on behalf of his wife, for she was barren, and Hashem allowed himself to be entreated by him. Why do we use that specific language of Vayeh Etar, the specific language of the way that Yitzchak prays in a specific manner, and we focus on the fact that who is the central character in the entreatment of God? It's specifically Yitzchak and not Rivka. She does not seem to be part of that project. She becomes pregnant, the children agitate, and she says, if so, why am I thus? She goes to inquire of Hashem, and now we switch. She becomes the central figure. She goes to find out what's going on. And we have this question which we're going to have to address. What does that mean when she asks the question, if so, why am I thus? What did she mean? What does it mean that the children were agitating within her? She receives a prophecy, which we're going to be spending in the future a lot of time on, that Hashem says to her four things. Number one, in verse 23, two nations are in your womb. So she now knows that indeed she's carrying twins. It seems to be the first indication that she has of that fact. Number two, these two regimes from your insides will be separated. So that not only does she first find out that there are two of them, and that they're both going to become nations, but that they're going to be distinct, separated, and they are not going to work in tandem together. They're going to be separated from inside of you. Prophecy number three about these boys are, might will pass from one regime to the other, which would be a follow-up of that second prophecy, that they won't work together, but that it's always going to go one to the other. I believe we mentioned last week, the sages use, they don't actually call it a seesaw, but that's in essence what they're describing, that the powers of Esav and the powers of Yaakov will always be a seesaw. When one is up, one goes down. When one goes down, one goes up. If the seesaw wasn't, they speak in a very wordy way, the sages. They actually say, when one goes up, one goes down, when one goes down. They could have just said, it's a seesaw. We would have understood what they were talking about. But in essence, that's prophecy number three, that might will pass from one regime to the other. And then the last of the four prophecies, and at the end of the day, who ends up on top? The elder will serve the younger. And again, we mentioned that not only does it say that simply Yaakov will be greater, but that, or I shouldn't say Yaakov, not just that the younger will be greater, but that the elder will serve the younger, which is very different than simply saying, in our example from last week, you're going to have two children as quarterbacks, the younger one's going to be even better. Okay, so fine, they're both good, just one's better. It's different. The elder will actually serve the younger. That's the prophecy that she receives. Does she tell this prophecy to her husband Yitzchak? We don't know for sure. Text doesn't tell us, but we have a hint in verse 24 that the next verse says, when her term to bear grew full, behold, hine, there were twins in her womb, and certainly the indication is that it was a surprise to everybody else, implying, although we won't say definitively, that she indeed did not say anything to Yitzchak. First one emerged red, entirely like a hairy mantle. They named him Esav, and I want to make a correction from last week. Esav, I thought last week, was derived from the word se'ar, of hair. It's actually, Rashi quotes, derived from the word asu, to be made full or complete, that he was born as if already fully developed. I just want to correct that it seems that the name Esav comes from the word to be made, not necessarily from the word of hair. So anyway, we have two, we mentioned this last week again, we had two descriptions of Esav as he's born. Number one, that he's red. Number two, that he's hairy. And then he's named for the seemingly impression that's given that he's already fully developed. And they're both external descriptions of him. If you looked at him, that's what you would see. You would see hair, you would see a reddish hue, and that's the Torah's description of him. Why is that significant? We will have to see. And then they name him Esav. Who names him? We don't know, but it's a they. There's somebody plural. Vayikra'u, they name him Esav. And then the last verse that we did last week, Ve'achrechein yotzo achiv, and after that his brother emerged, and his hand was grasping onto the heel of Esav, so he named him Yaakov. And Yitzchok was 60 when she gave birth to them, so that ties us back to the very first verse, that it had been a full 20 years that they had been married, because the first verse said, or second verse in our story says that Yitzchok was 40 when he married Rivka, and he is now 60 when the twins are born, so 20 years go by of barrenness, and now they have this children. And then we mentioned, as we concluded last week, that Yaakov is also, we're given a description of him upon birth, but it's not a physical description of his characteristics, not about his hair color, nor about his the hue. We're just told that he's physically holding on to the heel of Esav, and that he gets his name because of that. Who names Yaakov?
He.
It's a he. Whoever named Esav was a they. Whoever is naming Yaakov is a he, it's singular, and the name Yaakov comes from the word akev, heel. And again, we pointed out that this physical description of Yaakov as he's born is significant enough for us to name him. I gave the example, if a child was born and he's got his finger on his nose, and his parents would say, let's call him Nosy his whole life. You say, well, that's sort of silly. I mean, just because his hand was on his nose when he was born, so now we're going to call him Nosy his whole life? Well, we do that to Yaakov. His hand is on Esav's heel, and the he who names him, who we're going to leave nameless right now, we could assume it's his father Yitzchak, but the Torah does not tell us that. It just says he named him Yaakov. Somehow this idea of holding on to the heel of his older brother was more significant to him to be named after than simply a child born today with his fingers on his nose. So that's what's the significance of that, and why do we care so much? I'll share a comment that somebody made to me after the class yesterday. The prophecy that Rivka was given was specifically the second prophecy, two regimes from your insides will be separated. So the language seemed to be that from your insides they will be separated. And isn't it interesting that the Torah actually describes their birth and they're still attached? That the idea of these two separate nations, two regimes being separated, going in their own directions, and the language was from your insides, when indeed, as they're actually born, it's Yaakov clinging on to Esav, still physically attached in some way, as they are actually born, which is just something of note. One other point of note of interest as before we move along, where else do we have the word akev already? Heel in the Torah. Yeah?
Earlier on with the snake.
The snake. The snake in the story of the Garden of Eden, which we studied at length in this forum as well. So at the end of that story, when God comes down and gives out all of the punishments and consequences to the three principal players, Adam and his wife Chava and the Nachash, the snake, what's the snake's curse? That he will slither on its belly, it'll eat the dust of the earth, and there will be enmity always between the snake and mankind. Man will pound your head, and you will bite his heel. So the concept of akev, heel, has already appeared once. It appears specifically in that which is given the new relationship between mankind and the snake, where they used to have a relationship of almost equals, colleagues. If you read through that story, the snake is a talking, walking, intelligent, conniving being, and it talks to Chava, and there's no indication in that story that it's surprising that the snake talks to Chava. There's no textual hint that says that her reaction was one of like, whoa, talking snake. It's like completely normal. The snake engages her in a conversation and she responds. And then afterwards, there's a change. Now it's going to be this hatred between snake and mankind. He's going to be pounding your head and you will bite his heel. That's the language that's used. And here we have Yaakov now holding on to the heel of Esav. And let's assume it's his father, Yitzhak, or somebody who names him says, that's real significance. The idea of Yaakov holding on to the heel is going to define who he is so that we will name this child Yaakov. Yeah. We do not know. We're leaving it blank for now. All that we know is that it's singular in the language of the Chumash. Vayikra Shemo Yaakov. There is no pronoun prior to that in the pasuk which would tell us for sure who it is. I think it's most logical to assume that it was Yitzchak, but it's in distinction to Esav's being named by a plural they. So I don't know, we could either, Esav might have either been named by both Rivka and Yitzchak as parents together, or by the people, something. But it's a they name Esav, he names Yaakov. One other point of interest before we move along. Oh, it was the afterwards. The language of, in Pasuk of Chafav 26, and after that his brother emerged, V'achrechein yatzo achiv. If you were just reading this in context, you would have said, first, the first one emerged in verse 25, and he totally came out, he was completely born. And then afterwards came his brother. When in reality, Esav was never fully out, before Yaakov already begins his emergence as well, because he's holding on to Esav's heel. So even though the language seems to imply there was a firstborn and then afterwards emerged a second one, it was much closer in time. Okay, but that being that as it may. Okay, we got through half of the story, but I want to again stress there is no actual break in the Torah between verse 26 and 27, even though on your sheets I broke it into part 1 and part 2. That's only for our purposes as we go back in depth to look at the story. It's easier if we break it down as opposed to dealing with, you know, 12, 13 psukim at one time. We're going to deal with 6 or 7 at a time. So I broke up the story into 2 parts, but it's really one long contiguous story. There is no pause, paragraph break, anything in the Torah itself to stop from where we were. Got to last week from where we're up to now. So let's continue. That was a brief 7-minute synopsis of what we did last week in an hour. Let's move forward. Ready? Okay, so now we get into the birthright part of our story. Verse 27. Vayigdalu hane'arim. So that's it. Following the story of their birth, we're given descriptions of Esav as hairy and red, a description of Yaakov holding onto his heel, and that's it. That's all we're told about. And we know nothing else about the development of Yaakov and Esav. As we now move, they grew up. Vayigdalu hane'arim. And now we are told what becomes of the boys as they grow. Vayihi Esav ish yodeya tzayid, ish sadeh. Esav was a man who understood hunting. Yodeya tzayid. Tzayid means to hunt. He knew and understood hunting. And ish sadeh, a man of the field. V'Yaakov ish tam yoshevo halim. And Yaakov was a tam. Now, tam is an interesting word to translate. There are words used in the Torah, tamim versus tam. Tam is, we find him in the Pesach Haggadah. Who is the tam?
Simple.
The simple son. The word tam in its simplest translation would mean simple. And in the Haggadah, would you say that that's a pejorative word, a complimentary word? What kind of word is the tam? The son who...
Really, really insulting.
For a Jew, it's insulting to be simple. Right? No, he's not the wise son. He's not the one who doesn't even know how to ask, but he's the simple son. And his question is one of utter simplicity. What's this? So the word tam itself just means simple. Tamim, in that conjugation of the word, the plural conjugation, it has more of a connotation of wholesome. So we see here we have the usage of Yaakov being an ish tam. Wholesome, simple, we'll have to define exactly what does the Torah want us to think or to know about Yaakov that he's defined as such, as a ish tam, yoshev ohalim, one who dwells, sits in tents, which has what kind of connotation?
Studying,
learning, and he's not involved in the field. Esav goes out to the field, he's a hunter, he's one who knows or understands hunting. And Yaakov is one who sits in tents. And already the Torah is clearly giving us descriptions which give you very different images of the two boys. One who knows the field, one who knows how to hunt, versus one who is more simple or wholesome, and one who dwells in tents. Now, if we were to stop... Yeah?
Called tongue.
Probably. That's a good question we'll look into. This is the very first place where we find. There would be a mitzvah in the Torah much later of Tamim Tihiyeh Hashem Elokeichem. Be whole, pure with God. Well, what does that mean? So, well, Yaakov is defined as an Ish Tam, and now I'm being commanded to be Tamim. So that'll be trying to help us understand what these terms mean.
Such a simple person, though, sees straight to truth.
Could be. Is it so? What would it mean for us if we're being commanded to be simple? I mean, does it mean not intelligent, not complex, not looking into things?
Straightforward, yashar.
So the Torah doesn't say he was an ish yashar, yoshev ohalim, that he was a straight man. It says he was a tam. So we're going to have to define that term. I'm asking questions now. These are good questions, important questions, that it doesn't say he was yashar. It says he was tam. So what does tam mean? Okay, but let's leave it as wholesome for now, or simple, and we will move on. Now, Rivka has a prophecy. She knows something as she's watching these boys grow up. She knows who was the elder, and she knows who was the younger. She knows that there were going to be two separate boys who were going to be born, that there were going to be two separate nations, that might was going to pass, and that who was going to end up on top? It was the younger one. So she's looking at the scene, and she sees the elder one out there in the fields, hunting, and she sees her younger son as a tam, the simple, wholesome boy, sitting and studying. Now, does that fit or does that not fit with the prophecy that she received?
Yes.
Right? It fits perfectly. And which one would she favor if you were Rivka, having received that prophecy from God himself, and you looked at these two boys? Right? I mean, it wouldn't be like, you would see, God himself told you, might will pass from one to the other. It will not be that they will be both. They're going to be separate. They're going to be different, and that the elder will serve the younger. Now Yitzchak, if he does not know this prophecy, he sees a very different picture as the boys grow up. Verse 28. Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav kitzayid b'fiv. Yitzchak loved Esav because game was in his mouth. We're going to see this phrase is going to be the subject of a lot of talk in the commentators. The Torah tells us why Yitzchak loved Esav, because tzayid b'fiv, literally game was in his mouth.
Was it referred to actually to an animal,
tzayid? Yeah. Meaning, the simplest meaning of that would mean that food, game, hunted animals, was in his mouth, was in Yitzchak's mouth, that he had been fed often and well by Esav. Kitzayid b'fiv. The words can also mean tzayid. In this context, the one that I just translated was a noun. The tzayid, meat, game, was in his mouth. Tzayid can also be a verb. He loved Yitzchak because tzayid b'fiv, he was hunted through his mouth, meaning through Esav's mouth, that he fooled him with his words, and Yitzchak became the game. He became the target, where we will see, those are the two translations as you have in the English side, but we'll talk a lot about this. Now, what's interesting is, again, Yitzchak is described as loving anyone. He could have loved both boys. He doesn't have a prophecy. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But he specifically, the Torah says, loves Esav, and for a reason. Tzayid b'fiv, game was in his mouth. And again, we'll spend some time understanding that. V'rivka ohevis as Yaakov. And Rivka loved Yaakov. So what do you note about this pasuk?
I'm just surprised that it doesn't say Yitzchak loved Esav more than Yaakov, and Rivka loved Yaakov more than Esav.
Okay, it almost seems that this would be like your classic parenting mistake, right? It says like they each one is defined as only loving one, as opposed to what Dean is suggesting. It should have said Yitzchak loved Esav. Now that also would be, we could talk about from a parenting perspective, but at least that would seem to us to be that. Here the Torah defines Yitzchak as loving Esav and Rivka as loving Yaakov. There's something else very interesting in this pasuk, yeah?
It doesn't say only.
Okay, meaning?
You said it says they only loved this one. It just says this is the one they loved.
Okay.
You're
saying that it might not be to the exclusion of someone else.
Right.
Okay. Well, then that would bring up the next point. Then there's still something missing here in this pasuk. Why would Yitzchak care so much that there's food in his mouth? I'm not sure if this is exactly what you meant to ask, but I'll ask it this way. Is this a reason that we would expect from Yitzchak Avinu, who is defined, the trait, Yaakov is, Avram is chesed, Yitzchak is strength, is gvura, is din, judgment. Does it fit that Yitzchak would love his son, forgetting about all the other details that we know about, Does it fit that the reason given is a valid reason that he should care at all about the fact that game was in his mouth? It's an odd way of describing Yitzchak as anything that he would care about at all. Excellent question. Let's leave it at that for now. Yes?
Okay, so very simply, Yitzchak loved Esav because game was in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Rivka loved Yaakov, but it doesn't say why she
loved. Excellent. That's what I was looking for. Good. Why is one given a reason and one the other? In other words, if the standard would be Rivka, you don't need a reason. Then Yitzchak, why is Yitzchak given a reason? If Yitzchak said, why is Rivka? Why do we have this distinction that Yitzchak, we're told why he loved Esav, and Rivka, we're not told anything. We're not told how she felt about Esav, just blank, just she loved Yaakov. Why? I don't need to tell you. Was it because of a prophecy she had? Maybe we can conjecture that she knew that there was something about him. Maybe it's obvious because he was the Yoshev Olam, he sat dwelling in the tents, studying, and he was in Ishtam. But the Torah doesn't say. Yitzchak, we are told, loved Esav because game was in his mouth. Now we can question if that's a good reason or not. That seems a little bit odd to us that that would impact Yitzchak. Game was in his mouth. But we're at least given a reason, and Rivka, we're not told. Excellent. Okay, let's move on. So far, so good. Any other questions on that? Okay, 29, Vayozid Yaakov Nizid, and Yaakov simmered a stew. Very often in Hebrew, you'll notice the noun and the verb are the same word. Vayozid Nizid. Nizid is the noun, a stew. Vayozid is, he made a stew. It's very often in Hebrew you find that conjugation. Vayozid Yaakov Nizid, Yaakov simmered a stew. Vayovo Esav min ha-sadeh, and Esav came in from the field, vehu ayef, and he was really, really tired, exhausted. Questions, comments?
Big jump to go. Here we're talking about Esav and what's bringing his game. Yaakov simmering the stew.
Okay, hey, excellent. So here we have a switch. In other words, if we would have gone just from verse 27 or 28, Yitzchak, or 27 and 28, it's Esav who's the man doing things around. He's the one, he's the hunter, he's the one who knows the field. Yaakov is just, you know, he's the simple guy in the tents, he's studying. And he's the one making the stew. Okay, interesting comment, fine. What else is bothersome about this pasuk?
Why is he simmering
the stew? Very out of context. Like, we have this story. The boys are growing up. We're told that one is more of a man in the field, one is a hunter, the other one dwells in the tent. And then Yaakov made a stew. Like, by chance, is there a reason? Significant. Excellent. Next.
Is he always exhausted?
Good. That'll be the third. That, right, that'll be the last. In other words, break down the verse phrase by phrase. We're told information and ask a question on every piece of information that we're told. Do we need this information? Was that unusual that Esav should walk in exhausted? Now, that's a significant question because, as we know, there's going to be a very significant dialogue that's going to take place following this verse. We're going to sell something that seems to be of great significance, the birthright, as we know. In what state is Esav as he comes in from the field? He's exhausted. Well, was he exhausted every day? Did he come home from the field after long days of work and every day was the same? I'm starving. What's to eat? So the Torah goes out of its way to tell us, Yaakov's making a stew. Esav comes home exhausted. From what? From a regular day, a different kind of day, why are we told this information as the story develops? But those are excellent questions on this verse. Why is Yaakov making the stew? Interesting that it's Yaakov who is the one who's making the stew. Esav comes in from the field and he is exhausted. Okay, so anything else? Let's move on. 30. Pasuk Lamed. Vayomer Esav Yaakov. Esav says to Yaakov, Haliteini no. Min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh, ki ayef anochi. Pour into me now, hal'iteni na, the language of na, like na is a language, sometimes na is a language of please, and it sometimes has a language of now. So pour now, just like pour it into my mouth, min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh, he defines it not as the stew that the pasuk defined it as, in the previous pasuk, pour into me this red stuff, because I am exhausted. Al kain karat shemo Edom, he therefore called his name Edom. Edom from the word Adom of red. Questions, comments? Excellent. We have a lot of these missing pronouns when it comes to naming people. We had Esav originally being named, and who was he named by originally? They. And they named him Esav. Esav, as we've corrected ourselves from Asu, he was done. He was made. And now he's called Edom. Where is that? Now, we don't know who's calling him that. He called his name Edom. Whoever he is, we're going to leave that blank. Where does the word Edom come from?
Adama?
No, and it just reading the verse, it would seem from the red stuff. Right? The pasuk says, he said, give me some of that red stuff, ha-adom, ha-adom, ha-zeh, that really red stuff. Therefore, they called his name Edom. So they called his name Red. Now, something else should wait, that's interesting. What else do you know about the name Red? Or about the word Red?
How do you spell Adam?
In Hebrew or in English?
Hebrew.
Same way.
Yeah.
Where else did Red come up? He was defined as red. So it's interesting. So when he's born, we're given two descriptions of him. One, that he was red, and two, that he was hairy. And that they, because of that, called his name Esau from, like, done. He was made. And now, later on in life, we don't know exactly how long this is, or how much later this is, he says, pour me some of that red stuff. And he, we don't know who that is, calls his name Edom. So it's interesting that the why is he being called Edom because of this conversation of give me some of that red stuff, but it takes us back to the original description we have of him in which he's defined as being red. Interesting that we just have this redness with him and the word Edom, Adom, that's part of it. Yeah. Okay, what else do we have in this pasuk that's of interest, of note?
Pour into me?
Okay, it's clearly a very base language. Just like, I'm going to like, just like pour it in. A very strange language for somebody to speak. Very unrefined. Good.
What's the shoresh of that word?
I think it's la'at, I believe. But I will look there. We'll see Rashi's going to define that for us. What else do we see in this verse that ties us back to the previous verse in Choftes in 29? He's exhausted. We have this idea comes up again. In verse 29, the Torah tells us that Yaakov is simmering a stew. Esav is coming from him and he's exhausted. So I asked, that's interesting that you're telling me that. Like, is that relevant? Is that unusual? What's so special about that? Well, in the very next verse, Esav sees the stew and says, pour it in, because I am exhausted. So again, he brings us back to that. That somehow that's part of this story and part of his request. Pour it into me because I am exhausted. And therefore he called his name Edom, which we just need to, we've like redefined the character. Somehow Esav is now giving a new name. He is not necessarily going to be called that regularly. The Torah is going to continue to call him Esav throughout. Although we will see, we will get back to this name Edom. We're going to trace this redness. We're going to trace the redness from... Remember, we have a lot of stories to do. This is just our first story, which we've broken down into two parts. We then have to do the story in which Yaakov is going to steal the birthright. And then we're going to do the third story in which Yaakov, on his way back to the land of Israel, meets up with his brother after he's already has his 11 children on the way back. At the very end of that story, we're going to bring back the name Edom. That's going to come back up. So that which started in our first word of introduction to Esav, that he was red, he was Adom. Then we have pour the red stuff in me, and we call him Edom, with the root of the word red. And then we're going to get back to that name at the very end of the story, in which we're going to define him as a nation, as the nation of Edom. When the sages refer to the nation of Edom, it's the descendants of Esav, which he gets from this episode, even though the Torah is going to continue to call him Esav throughout, but this name Edom is going to stick, not from the redness that he had when he was born, which we're told about for some reason, but from the redness that he begs Yaakov, pour it in me, I'm starving.
Is it all spelled the same? Am I right?
Yeah. Yes, you're right. 100%. But please don't expect any answers. Okay, but that's a very good question. Adom, red. Edom, red. Adam, man. And Adama, earth, all share a root. That's correct. Okay, 31. Laman Aleph. Vayom Yaakov, michro chayom es bechoyras chali. And Yaakov said, sell as this day your birthright to me. Questions, comments.
Why didn't he just give him soup?
Okay, we could start with that. Okay, here's your older brother. He's coming in. He's famished. He asks you in a little unrefined, uncouth way, like, pour some of that red stuff in me. And instead of Yaakov saying, sure, my brother, and giving him a bowl, he says, sell your birthright to me. Okay, good, yeah.
As this day mean.
Excellent. Very interesting language. Yaakov says, sell as this day, michro chayom, your birthright to me. Good. Excellent point.
What was he hoping to get from this
point? Oh, now we're getting to the real existential question. You're reading this story for the first time.
It's hard.
You're like, what?
Where did this come from?
Wait, huh? Two boys, twins, they're growing up. All we know about them, the Torah tells us, is that Yaakov became an Ishtam Yoshev Olim. He's dwelling in the tent. Yaakov in the field. One day he's making a stew. Esav, it's like just another day at the office. Esav comes home. He's really tired. And Yaakov says, sell your birthright to me. Sell my birthright to you? Like, where are you coming from? How long have you been thinking about this? What? Now that's going to be a much larger question, this existential question of this whole story. And then, so let's just stop there. Let me ask you, what do you think that means, sell your birthright to me?
Well, his mother had a conversation with him and said that that's what we have to do.
Okay, now, is that true? A, is that true that that Rivka had a conversation with him about it? And even if it is, was there anything in the prophecy that Rivka received that said that the younger needs to somehow purchase the status of the elder? Or just that the elder will eventually serve the younger? Was this necessary? I'm taking your comment and rephrasing it as a question. Did Yaakov, where do you start asking these questions? A, did Rivka talk to Yaakov? Did Yaakov know that there was some prophecy out there that he was going to dominate? Or do we read this story without that prophecy, that Rivka kept it to herself? Now, this is going to be one question where we have to trace all of these stories. Does Yaakov and Yitzchak, both, do any of them know anything about this? If so, we could take it one route. And if we say no, then we have to read this story without that. Without Yaakov being aware that there was this prophecy, he still comes up with this idea on his own, I need the birthright. Well, that will then lead us to the following series of questions. A, what do you get with the birthright? What are you selling? What is it trade as? What's its commodity? Okay, so now we write up a document, and Esav says, okay, I'm selling you my birthright. He hands it over, and Yaakov says, ah, I got it. And then someone says, Yaakov, what'd you get? How would Yaakov answer that question? I mean, it's a very serious question. In other words, when you read the story, and you read it as children, you could read it as children. And you read it as intelligent adults, and you say, okay, fine. Why does he want it? We haven't answered that question. Has he been thinking about this his whole life, like waiting for the opportunity to jump in and say, sell your birthright to me? Sounds like it. It just sounds like he's been waiting, because Esav goes, sell me your birthright. Wow. Has it been this long dialogue that they've been having? And what does he get? What did he want? What does he get? What does it mean to sell a birthright? Yeah.
Not exactly that, but if you go back to his birth and he's holding on to the heels as if he's trying to come out first.
Okay. So what that would definitely point to, and we will have precedent for this throughout the Chumash, apparently it's clear that there's some rights of the firstborn that others don't have. That there's a status or an actual right to something that the firstborn would have, and that now you're getting back and addressing some of that issue of Yaakov holding on to the heel, somehow saying, no, I want it, but Esav gets there first. And now Yaakov is saying, sell me that right. So we are definitely going to have to define a little bit as to what that would represent and why Yaakov wants it. But that is Yaakov's opening statement. So we have the question of, why doesn't he just give him the soup? Well, he doesn't do that. What does it mean, sell to me as this day? And what exactly does it mean to sell a birthright? Well, let's see Esav's response. Pasuk Lamed Beis 32, Vayomer Esav, Hine anochi holech lamus. Behold, I am going to die. V'loma ze li b'chora. So of what use to me is this birthright?
How old were they?
Excellent question. All we know is in verse 27, we're told that they grew up. Now, whether or not that means 13 or 23, they've grown up. So there's something. And then we're told about this story, so unclear exactly. Now, what do you think it means that Esav is going to die?
He's starving.
Right? So on the simplest level, and we'll see that the sages are not willing to entertain that on a deeper level, Esav is saying, I'm literally about to die. If you don't give me food, I'm going to drop dead right here and now. So why do I need a birthright if I'm going to die? At which point, what would this sale look like if we took this interpretation, the simplest reading of the text? Esav comes in and he's starving and he says, I'm famished. But he's not famished like I'm really, really hungry. He's I'm famished, I'm going to die. Yaakov has this delicious pot of fresh stew. And Esav says, please, pour some of that in, I'm starving. Yaakov says, sell me the birthright. And Esav says, I'm literally going to die, so what do I need it for? And Yaakov says, fine, it's a deal. And he gives him some soup. How would you feel about that story? Well, impetuous?
Way beyond.
On whose perspective? Who does the story look bad upon? Yaakov. He's got his... If we read the story as on that level, his brother is saying, I'm literally about to die if you don't give me a bowl of soup.
Knows the value of that birthright. If he's been in the tent all his growing up years, they have to be older. He's already sitting there.
So Yaakov is there. His brother's going to die. His brother's going to, and he says, so let him die.
He's grown up.
We got a bunch of questions here. A, so it's a funny sale. Would this sale hold up in any court of law that you know about?
No, it's made under duress.
Right? It's made on a... He comes in, he's told he's exhausted. Esav himself says to Yaakov, pour it in me, I'm exhausted. Yaakov says, sell me your birthright. And Esav says, I'm going to die. So what do I need this birthright for? It's a very strange... The dialogue is fascinating. Now, on the simplest level, that's what it would come out with. We will see as we learn through the commentators, they're not going to be satisfied with that interpretation. Because if you read it, there's something missing there. First of all, because Yaakov could simply have just done nothing. All right, it's an interesting story. Let's leave those questions for now. We'll see how everyone's going to learn this. Yes?
I was going to say, if Yaakov was such a righteous person, would he not, the first instinct would give him the soup?
Excellent, right? That was Jennifer's comment. So here you have Esav coming in starving. He asks for food. And instead of giving him, so he says, sell me your birthright. And then we're really going to understand Esav's response. Esav's response is, I'm going to die. For what use is this birthright to me? Now, it would seem that Esav had an answer to the question that we asked a few minutes ago of, what do you get with the birthright? What does that entitle you to? What does it mean? And Esav says, he had some awareness of that, and says, I'm going to die. Of what use is this to me? Now, when he says the words, I'm going to die, what we're going to see, many of the commentators are going to be picking up, did he mean, literally now, I'm going to drop dead? Or does he mean, having this birthright, and on some level, I will eventually die, and I will gain nothing from this birthright? What does he mean when he says, I'm going to die? For example, when Hashem says to Adam, on the day that you eat from the fruit that I told you not to eat from, you shall surely die. And what happens when he eats from the fruit? He does not die. Even though God said, on the day that you eat of the fruit, you shall surely die. Because it didn't mean you shall surely die on the spot, but that you've now become a person who shall... It might mean something else. So what does Esav mean when he says, I am going to die? If it's the picture that I painted, which is the simplest reading of it, of, I'm so hungry, I can't even take another step, I'm never going to make it. That would paint a very funny picture of this whole transaction. So what we will then have to do is understand, well, then what did he mean when he said, I'm going to die?
He's a hunter. Maybe he felt
that. You could take it on that level. I'm not going to live so much longer anyway. The benefits of the birthright accrue over 10, 15, 20 years. I'm not going to be around long enough to see that of what use is it. That would be a much more viable approach than what I said of, I'm so hungry, I'm going to die right now if you don't give me any soup. Certainly that would be a better approach if I'm going to die. Of what value is this later? It might even mean longer term than that. We'll see what the sages and the commentators have to say about it. But this is certainly Esav's response of, it is of no value to me because I am going to die. Now, again, let's just put one more question on this and then we'll move on. When you come to evaluate something, so you're looking at, like, what am I going to gain out of it? Somehow, in Esav's value system of what he gets from the birthright, the fact that he's going to die at some point says to him, whatever I would gain by the birthright is of no value to me. So we ask the question, what is a birthright? What do you get with it? Whatever it is, Asa felt, because I'm going to die, that's the reason why I don't want it. Because I'm going to die, I have no use for this birthright. So far, so good? Lamed Gimel, 33, Vayomer Yaakov, Hishova li kayom. Yaakov said, swear to me as this day. Vayishovalo, he swore to him. Vayimkor es bechoraso liYaakov, and he sold his birthright to Yaakov. Okay, questions, comments.
Maybe he didn't think he could sell him the birthright because if you're the older one, you're the older one. You'll always be the older.
Okay, are you coming from anything textual, or are you just throwing that out there? No, because we don't see anything like that. No, you're asking a question that we can ask. We could have really asked that question back in verse 31 in Laman Aleph. We could have said, wait a minute, Yaakov just said, sell me your birthright. We could have asked that as a question and said, can you do that?
Right.
So what does it mean to have the birthright? Is it sellable?
Right.
So we can ask that question. But that's clearly, this dialogue is not bothered by that question. Yaakov says, sell it to me. Esav says, sure, I have no use for it. Yaakov says, swear to me. Esav does, and he sells it. So that's a question that we would ask. That would be an external question, not an internal, in the text kind of way, like, I didn't know you could sell a birthright. Well, apparently you can. Why is that? We could ask that question, but that's not in here. What do we have? What about Pasuk Lamed Gimel that's of interest or of note?
As this day.
Excellent. As this day. In other words, we had that question already in Laman Aleph. Yaakov, when he originally makes the request in 31, says, sell as this day your birthright to me. And now Yaakov, Esau, when he responds, sure, I mean, what do I need it for anyway? Yaakov says, swear to me as this day. Again, bringing in that as this day. What's the first gut reaction? What does this as this day imply?
Right now.
Either right now or any other thoughts?
Or is it usually powerful?
It is certainly a powerful word. So let's take your comment and put it as a question. What would have been if Yaakov and Esav would not have sworn? Yaakov would have said, sell me your birthright. And Esav would have said, fine, I don't want it anyway, I'm going to die.
Next week he changes his mind.
So what element does the swearing change in their dialogue / agreement? But Yaakov clearly felt that he needed it, and he needs it as this day. Somehow the as this day, I don't know if it adds clarity. Day as opposed to night. Night is dark, you can't see. Day is clear, you can see. If it's a reference to just making it clear. But somehow Yaakov demands not only an agreement, but an actual oath. I'm trying to remember, where have we seen, let's put our collective heads together, where have we seen oaths at this point in the Chumash already? I can only think of one. Avraham and Eliezer. When Avraham sends his trusted servant to find a wife for Yitzchak, he makes him swear on the terms of the deal of you're going to go only to this land to find the girl, and if you can't find her from there, then you're absolved from your oath. But there we had an oath. I don't recall now personally, here in chapter 25, I don't recall another oath, although we will see others throughout the Chumash. I don't believe we've had one prior to this story.
Though you had to touch a certain part of the body.
Yes.
You swear, but this one is not mentioning that.
Excellent. So there that was under the thigh, which is most likely actually a reference to the Bris Milah. You would just like in the times of the Sanhedrin, you would swear holding a Sefer Torah, some type of a mitzvah, something of significance in that spiritual sense. So it seems like that's what that meant, to swear under the thigh, was like on the concept of the covenant of the Milah. And here we don't have that. Here we just have a plain oath. Unclear what, if anything, was involved in that. But Esav goes along with it, and he sells it, and he sold his birthright to Yaakov, apparently for the bowl of soup. Yaakov said, I'll give you the soup if you sell to me your birthright. Now, the truth is, we don't have to read the story that way. I could read it differently. I could read that Yaakov's been asking to buy the birthright for $1,000 for a week or a month. Esav comes in starving and says, give me some soup. And Yaakov says, I will, but we got to finish the deal we've been talking about. If you sell me your birthright for the $1,000, I'll give you the soup. Not that I sold it for a bowl of soup. I sold it for whatever the terms were that we were going to sell it. And I'm just withholding the soup until you agree to sell it. I could read the story that way, and that would certainly fit in the text of the Chumash that we are given. Because here the Torah just says, swear to me as this day. So he swore to him, and he sold his birthright to Yaakov. Did Yaakov ever use the words, sell me your birthright for the bowl of soup? No. He doesn't say that. Back in verse 30, Esav asks for soup. Yaakov says, sell as this day your birthright to me. I want your birthright. What does Esav give for the birthright? It doesn't say. I'm saying, what is Yaakov giving to buy it? So, if it's only for a bowl of soup, then it's a little bit unequal. But the question is, what is he really getting? Yaakov says, swear to me. He does. And he sold his birthright to Yaakov, so that whatever it is that you get with the birthright, now it's been transferred from Yaakov to, from Esav to Yaakov. Now, is Yaakov still going to be defined as the younger, or does he now become the elder? Right? He is the younger. Now he's the younger with the rights of the elder. He's got the rights of the firstborn because he's holding on whatever that means to be able to sell that. But he now has it.
Can the boys do this without their father, without Yitzchak? Mm-hmm. I know they fool women, I know what the story is. But
so now let's add that to the question of what does it mean to sell a birthright and who holds on? Sounds like Esav as having been born as the firstborn. Holds the rights of the firstborn, holds the rights of this birthright, and he has the entitlement to sell it if he so chooses. And it doesn't matter whether or not Yitzchak knows or doesn't know, or was involved or wasn't involved. That's certainly as it seems. Okay, one more verse for today. Lamed Daled v'Yaakov nosan le'Esav lechem u'nezid odoshem. Yaakov gave to Esav bread and lentil soup. Vayochal vayesht, and he ate and he drank. Vayokam vayeloch, and he arose and he left. Vayivez Esav es habechora, and Esav despised the birthright. That is the end of the story. The Torah then goes on to discuss the rest of the life of Yitzchak. So in other words, the Torah began with Yitzchak. He was 40 years old. He gets married. It then tells us about his wife's difficult pregnancy, how they finally had a pregnancy and twins. And then the boys grow up. We have this little birthright, and then the Torah goes back to Yitzchak. And we're going to talk about Yitzchak until we get to where he's about to die, and then we bring back the boys who want their blessings. But let's first get through this last verse. What do we find in this last verse, Lamed Daled?
He despises not what he did, he despises the birthright.
Excellent. Okay, now what does that mean, to despise a birthright? In other words, when he sold it, he said, I'm going to die, what do I need it for? Now that he sold it, it wasn't just that he regretted it. There wasn't a buyer's regret. There's this despise. So we could psychoanalyze it. But at least what we have certainly is that he looked down upon it. Vayivez. It was a bizayut. It was something to be despised. Whatever that concept is, whatever it means to sell, he now despises it. What else do we have in this pasuk?
Was pretty clever.
Okay, excellent. So let's go back. I like that point. In other words, Yaakov is defined as a tam, wholesome or simple, whichever word we're going to choose. Would we use that word to define this dialogue and interaction? No. Right? We wouldn't. Now, his name is called Yaakov, which means heal. It also means to deceive a little bit, as we'll see in the next story. Esav, when he's fooled, when Yaakov comes and steals the birthright, says, Ze ya'akveini po'amayim. He has deceived me twice. So the word akev is going to have that word, yet he's defined as a tam, simple, wholesome. Maybe not the words we would have chosen to define this. Excellent point. We're going to have to get back to all of that as defining the character of Yaakov. What else about this pasuk before we break?
Lentil soup.
Okay.
why are we now told it's lentil soup, and what's the significance?
Excellent.
Of that?
Beautiful point. When Yaakov makes the stew, it's in verse 29, it's simply defined as a stew. And Yaakov simmered a stew. Vayozed Yaakov nizid. Only later are we told that it's a nizid adoshim. So let's ask him the most simple question. Who cares?
Didn't it say his father, though?
So now you're giving an answer, right? Now you're giving an answer. In other words, why is it relevant that it was lentils? And if it is relevant, why are we only told it now at the end when he gives it over to Esav? And it wasn't told to us in the beginning. So if it's relevant, which we have to assume it is, it's somehow a hint to tell us a deeper level of the story. So it's interesting. And if not, we're only told about that at the end. Excellent point. There's something else about the food that he gives him. Gives him bread. Now, again, I ask the question. Who cares? Is that relevant? He gives him food. Let's say that wouldn't have been part of our story. He just gave him soup. So we really like, how come he didn't give him bread with the soup? We wouldn't have asked that question. It wouldn't have been relevant to us. I don't know, he gave him soup. I don't know, did he give him an appetizer also? Did he give him dessert? Did he give him water? I don't know. So we're told it's bread also. Now, I don't know if that's going to get us back to the question of, did he sell the birthright for soup? Was there a separate payment? And I was given, but he gave him more than just soup. He gave him bread. And then the Torah says a bunch of, what else did Yaakov, what did Esav do?
He ate and drank.
What did he drink? You think? Okay, so we have two options. Either the eating is referring to the bread and the drinking is referring to the soup, or he gave him something else. He gave him water or wine. I don't know what he gave him. And that for some reason, we don't need to know. We need to know that he gave him bread and lentil soup. And he ate and he drank. But it's just interesting. The verse is just interesting in what we have here. There's another couple interesting ones. What else do we have here?
Well, he doesn't say Birkat HaMazon. He doesn't say thank you. There's no more talk between the brothers.
Okay, excellent. There's no more dialogue that we're told about. In other words, it's always interesting to pay attention to dialogue in the Torah between Yaakov and Esav, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yitzchak and Avraham. Who speaks to? What do they say? So we have here, we're going to have a number of dialogues between Yaakov and Esav. Here is one in which Esav comes to give me soup, sell me your birthright. What do I care about it? And then swear to me, he does. And then there's no talking here, but there's a lot of verbs. Count up the verbs in this verse.
The rose
is
left. You know, he came in so exhausted. Now all of a sudden,
good. We got five. Is it six?
Six.
Right. He gets all right. Six. If you include Yaakov, gives him how many from Esav do we have? We have five consecutive verbs from Esav. He gets food. He eats. He drinks. He gets up. He leaves, and he despises. When you just read that one after another, the impression you're given is like it storms in. You know, eats, drinks, gets up, leaves, and despises. Why do we need to know that he got up and he left? Like, why is it relevant to us that he got up and that he left? Did we think they were going to sit there for... No, nothing happened. No more dialogue. He eats, he drinks, gets up, he leaves, and then we're told about an attitude change towards the birthright. Not only did he sell it, but now he despises it.
There's a lot missing in there.
Yeah, this is what we're told about. They grew up, one became a guy of the field, guy of the tents, and then we have this dialogue. That's our story just from the text, part one. As I mentioned a moment ago, the next pasuk goes back to, we're still in the middle of Yitzchak's life. The parsha told us begins with Yitzchak, getting married, not having children. And then we have a little bit about his children, twins, difficult labor, Rivka gets this prophecy, they're born, they grow up, Yaakov sells or buys the birthright. At this point, the Chumash is going to go back to the life of Yitzchak. He's going to have a couple of more episodes until he gets old and is about to die. At which point, as I mentioned, we're going to get back to the boys because he's going to want to bless the boys. And that's where we have the whole famous episode, which we'll go through, in which Rivka helps Yaakov sneak in, another not Tom-like behavior, sneak in and, so to speak, steal the blessing. So first he buys a birthright under questionable circumstances of a starving Esav. He's going to then steal the blessings. I'll have to go through all that. But let's tackle this first section first. So we're going to go back now. Next week, Mitzvah Shem, we're going to start. We're going to go through Rashi's commentary. We'll do the Ramban. We'll do Rav Hirsch. And then we will keep that all in mind. It'll all be fresh. as we then go on to episodes 2 and 3 to understand this eternal clash between the personages of Yaakov and of Esav. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.